I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Starting Nine podcast with me, Rich Lee. Today's is the first midweek episode, the first one that is out of the ordinary, that isn't coming out on a Monday, and is designed purely to give you yet more behind the scenes of the Starting Nine podcast. It is again with my very, very good friend Stokes, who is embarrassed at all the attention. You know, he's getting mobbed in the street. He's getting knickers thrown at him. He's just a celebrity. What can I say? We're kingmakers at the start of nine. But no, I think he's incredibly embarrassed actually at the fact that it has gone down well. I've been getting lots of lovely messages and I've been sure to send them on to him. And he is back in this episode. As I say, we go through questions from him, questions from listeners, and it is a shorter episode in lieu of the final episode coming next Monday, where I'll go behind the scenes telling you all about interviews with Calder Wood, MBE, Mike McCarthy, Sean Conway, Dan Norton, Charlie Mullins, OBE, that's a good one, and Susie Chan, rounding it out, bringing us to the end of our guests for Series 1. As ever, thank you very, very much. Come find us, Starting Line Show, on all of the socials, or Starting Line Podcast on all of the other ones. Say hey, email hello@startinglinepod.com. If you get in with a question in the next few hours, so this is going to be coming out on Thursday. If you get in with a question before Thursday evening, and this ages it, but it is what it is. If you get in with a question quick enough, then we can record it tonight and answer anything you want us to speak to. As ever, subscribe if you haven't already. Any and all reviews are read, are appreciated, are lovely. You'll hear me again at the end of the episode, but for now, and for the second time, without further ado, I bring to you my conversation answering his and many of your questions with Ashley Stokes. Let's get to some listener questions. Let's get to some of your questions. Do you want to start with a question from you?
So I've pinned a couple of questions, mostly because I want to sort of peek behind the curtain and sort of see what's what it's like to be a podcast host. But, and I think you've alluded to it in I believe it was the Shabir episode, but you've been talking about starting a podcast ever since you fell in love with podcasting when you started listening to Tim and Tom. You know, everything's gone on over the last few years that have meant things like running an agency is really challenging. And then, you know, with kids going into different phases of their life, that's challenging, you know. So I'm just interested, after all these years, why now for launching a podcast? Why not 5 years ago? Why not 2 years from now? What was it about now that made you want to go for it?
I just finally got bored of hearing myself talk about it. And I think the last couple of years, as you rightly say, COVID, post-COVID, you know, PR, marketing, advertising as industries have really struggled throughout it. And the company got to a fairly decent size, and I found myself still unfulfilled, unhappy. And yes, I know I was pulling a company, trying to lead us through an incredibly difficult time. Money for me has always been about financial security. And again, having been in a position where you don't have money, where you're sat with the electric off because, Christ, the emergency, you're pressing that button and it just won't come back on. So you're sat in the darkness and you think, this is shit. And as you know, as I said in a recent one, and I've been very cautious of what I do say and don't say about my upbringing, but you know, where debt collectors come to take things, you recognise quite quickly, or I certainly did, that you know, financial security is massively important. So, yeah, cool, got that. Built the company, working with fantastic clients, brands, family, all those things. And then I just got to fulfillment. And I was like, it's this thing that keeps coming up. It doesn't go from my head ever. I want to speak to people. I want to find out who they are, why they are, the way they are. My family, I don't think they'd be upset with me for saying, you know, they still have difficulties. And I think a lot of people do when life's been tough. You know, it doesn't just go away. You don't just get to 30 or 25 or 40 or whatever, 60, and it's just all of a sudden it just goes away, and you hope that you can be positive. And that's, you know, I mean, you've known me forever, I try to be optimistic and positive endlessly. So I think for me it was like, right, well, now's a good time. It's a bit of a love letter to my family, to my kids. This is what resilience and hard work and drive and ambition can lead to, and it can lead to success, it can lead to these people. And as I say, I was just speaking to people, about yourself included, about this, and I'd find myself stopping myself actually speaking about it, because I was like, you've heard this 50 times, you don't need to hear me talk about how much I want a podcast, and oh, I bought those mics that have sat there for 6 months, 12 months, whatever. So the thing that ended up actually starting this for me was, I was introduced to somebody in PR called Nina. She introduced me to, sounds like a weird clang, and I've said this on other things, but a guy called Comedy Dave. Now, Dave.
The Comedy Dave.
Yes. As in Radio 1's Comedy Dave. He was on the Chris Moyle Show. I was introduced to him, and it was very kind. And I talked to him about what I'm doing. I spoke about technical things like the mics and the mixer and, you know, what I'd record on and all those things. And then he said, so why aren't you doing this? I said, well, I'm a straight white man in his 30s. I was like, you know, nobody needs to have another podcast from a straight white man in his 30s. And do you know what it is? Twitter. Like, people getting on, I've been very active on Twitter. I've won a lot of business, you know, I'm a knobhead from Gloucester that is in an industry that doesn't generally reflect me. And I remember thinking, you know, seeing this negativity against people starting podcasts, and, oh, why don't you go and start another podcast? So you kind of, you know, you soak that up.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, yeah, sure. Basically, I just can't be bothered to put up with being slagged off for trying to do something. And that's not me. That isn't me at all. You know, I mean, how many things have I started,
well, this,
failed?
This is what I was going to say. Because I work in corporate, where there's red tape everywhere. You've got to go through various forums and gateways and anything to get things approved. And so I've always been in awe about how sort of quick you move. You'll have an idea, and then by the end of the week, you go, yeah, so we tried it, didn't work, but, you know. And so for me, that is, you know, normally it takes 3-4 months to get something pushed through in the world that I work in. And yet you're able to do things within a week, and you're not scared to take a risk. And then, yet this one...
This one, yeah, it took a long time. And they've never been worried about failing. Never once. And it's like, oh, if it fails, it fucking fails.
Although technically this is your second podcast.
Oh, that's true. I did PR in a car.
Yeah. Oh, no, see, I don't count that as a podcast. What I was thinking more of your tips to service. Yeah, available on Spotify.
It is available on Spotify still. I don't even know if my name's attached to it, but did that for a client thing during COVID. Christ, the things you'll do.
That was from Cheltenham Race Week, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I mean, it was quite good, I think. It was all right.
I followed some of those bets.
Did they come in?
Did they?
sorry, man. So in chatting to Dave, I said that, and he said, Rich, do you ever walk into a library and say, that's it, we've done it. We've got all of the books in the world that we ever need, all the authors in the world that we're ever going to need. Pack it up, boys, we're done.
I had a fantastic conversation. It was, and again, because all I do is quote podcasts. So it was Rob Brydon. I can't remember who he was speaking to, but they were talking about this exact thing. So this person said, yeah, I'm just about to start a podcast. Mm. And Rob Brydon made the joke about, oh, another white man starting a podcast. But then what they got to was that...
Cheers for that, Rob.
When TV first started, right, and everyone's on radio, there would have been exactly the same noise around, oh, what, do we need another TV show? We've already got two channels. Need another one? And now we've got hundreds of channels with hundreds of TV shows that cater to every audience, right? And we're just moving into that phase.
That's
so we've gone from radio to TV, then YouTube kind of popped up in the middle, and now we've got podcasts. So there's this aversion because it's like, why do we need it? In the same way that there's always aversion to a new media, and we're just moving through it. Because I love listening to podcasts.
I think they're the most incredible, I mean, obviously I do, otherwise I wouldn't do it, but the most incredible medium. It's intimate, it's informative, it's in depth. You can listen or watch. And again, coming back with video next series, you know, then podcasts go on YouTube too and all those things. So it does cut across lots of different channels, but I think it's the most incredible medium, the most wonderful, easy to access medium. So Dave was incredibly supportive and made me think differently about it. So that was the difference. And then from there, actually, I recorded with Dan Norton first. Yeah. That was last year, 18 months ago. So he was...
I couldn't believe it was that long ago.
So long, wasn't it? So he was episode, I want to say 11. Well worth checking out with rugby star. The best to ever do it, Dan Norton, rugby sevens. So he gave me his time and I was nervous as hell before doing that. Not because it's Dan, I know Dan. It was because you think that you're putting on this outfit, you're putting on this is what a podcaster sounds like, and this is what one looks like, and this is one how one acts. And I could feel it going back through that edit to pull it forward for this series. And obviously we updated the episode by then having a second conversation. You can be wonderfully unprofessional and still create something that sounds and feels
it's very human.
It's super human.
Very human. And I had to delete TikTok because that short form media is so addictive.
Yeah.
And it's just, I find it weird that both exist in the same space. You can be addicted to TikTok and lose hours just looking at nothing while also be captivated by a 2-3 hour conversation. I kind of don't understand how the brain can like both of those things.
That's true.
We're in a world where we love things to just be short and sharp.
Yeah.
But also we'll happily sit in this.
It's very selective, isn't it? I guess that's the beauty of it is, you know, to the point of, you know, no, we're not done with books yet. Myths of PR. You can go and buy it now from Amazon. PR bestseller, thank you very much. we're not done with books yet, but we, you know, for podcasts, there's something out there for absolutely everybody, and it's finding it. And you know, it might be interview podcasts like this one, it might be fiction, it might be just a comedy podcast, it might be, you know, there's so many different kinds of things out there, and I just think that the barrier to entry is wonderfully low. But also the barrier to entry is wonderfully low, which means there's this paradox, or you know, this incredibly difficult, there's too much choice. Yeah. And
which is the problem we face in the world at the moment.
You're seeing that across all media though, right?
Try and find a film on Netflix.
Yeah.
You spend half an hour trying to find it, whereas if you were just watching TV, you go, I'll watch this thing.
I do think podcast discovery is broken. I think, it's not broken because it was never fixed. Podcast discovery is something that is a problem that still hasn't been looked at and really sorted out yet. I think that's why celebrity podcasts do well, because then they announce it to their large following. And again, I'm fortunate to have, over 15 years of PR, built a decent following of PR people, predominantly and intentionally so, that then translated to something that meant that I could bring on guests like we've brought on. Hopefully that answers why now. And then the next step, actually, just to round that thought off, the next step was I interviewed producers. I went out. I said, right, I'm doing it. I'm going out with a job ad. Interviewed a load of producers and found...
And I think that's probably an interesting, you know, for the whole look behind the curtain thing, right? So when you look at YouTube creators, the story you tend to hear is, I started making videos in my bedroom. I somehow figured out how to do video editing. I somehow figured out how to do a little bit of marketing. And then I put it live and I hoped it would work. And I think a lot of people do that, and that massively slows everything down, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to put out an episode a week if you were taking on the responsibility. And I think your experience of business and everything that you've done up to now, I don't think the thought even crossed your mind that I'm going to do this by myself.
No.
You immediately
went,
I can't go out and let until I've got somebody who can support me and with the skills that I don't have. And I think recognizing that just shows that you've learned from experience in other areas.
I mean, what's that saying? If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And you know, I bow down to experts. I know that I'm not, you know, amazing. If I want to be good at something, I'll be fucking good at that thing. And that's just a mentality I've always had. I'll be as good as I can be, and I'll work. I'll be the hardest worker in the room, but I don't think I'll always be the smartest or the most capable. The second that I realised that I needed to bring somebody in to support on this, and almost to share the load and make it a real thing. And then I went through the process of, you know, creating the assets and learning. It's all been a learning process. That's so, series one for me.
So it's a great way to hold yourself accountable, right?
Yeah, 100%.
If you've said to somebody, I'm going to pay you X amount
it's a job
to do it. Mean. And then you go, I don't fancy doing one this week.
Yeah.
You know, easy to do if you're in control of it yourself. Yeah. You've got to just have a week off. But actually when someone else is reliant on you, you've got to step up, you've got to do it.
Very, very true. So yeah, hopefully that answers question one.
Question one, what were we like half an hour in? Cool. Would you like another one from me, or would you like
a listener question?
Okay, so we got one from Louise who emailed in.
For the next one, you listen to this, it's hello@startinglinepod.com, email in, and then across the socials as well, Starting Line Show, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. You can tell that I've done this a billion times by now. Starting Line Podcast on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Apologies.
Thank you, please,
for that, guys, because you definitely did that in the intro and the outro. You know, just put it in the middle as well, just in case we've all forgotten. So, you cover a number of difficult topics in your interviews. How do you balance getting the answers from your guests while being mindful of their emotions while in the room? Pretty deep one, that one.
That's a pretty deep one, isn't it? So, it's a podcast where, of course, I'm by its nature, I am speaking to people about who they are and why they are who they are. And by that fact, you can get pretty deep pretty quick. I didn't set out to make this a Bleeding Hearts podcast. I don't want this to be a Woe Is Me podcast, interviewing people until I find the person with the worst life in the whole world. And I say, here he is, this person, worst life, you know, look at him. You know, that's not what this is about. It's about success and finding people with that drive, resilience, ambition, all of those good things. But what it does mean is that, yeah, we have difficult conversations sometimes, and some that stick out. I mean, you know, Shabir's sticks out. You know, fleeing Afghanistan when he was 12, Mike McCarthy, you know, with his son having taken his own life. Some incredibly difficult conversations I had. And I guess I've always been one of those people, and you are this too. You are this too, where people come to you because you've got a kind face. You know, they come to you and they share a problem and you wanna support them. I don't find it difficult to empathize with those people. I guess because I remember being 8, 9 years old thinking, somebody has it worse. You know, somebody's got it worse than me right now. And I think that ability to step outside of what, you know, again, in my, you know, I've just turned 36, I look back and I think, no, that was pretty bad. You know, like there are aspects of that that weren't okay. But at the time, I was like, nope, somebody's got it worse. So whatever somebody's gone through, I think there's a degree of empathy. And I think I try and bring that kindness to a conversation and give people the room to speak. You know, this isn't therapy. This isn't me, you know, and how did that make you feel? It's how did that help you as a person on your path to whatever you want to do? And the three things I'm realizing people have in them that I'm speaking to, it's obsession, it's curiosity, and it's resilience. Every single person I'm speaking to has a large amount of each of those things. They get obsessive. I remember being 20, 21. I'd know every PR agency in the country, everybody that worked there, every campaign they did. I started something called PR Examples that essentially was a compendium for the PR industry. I wanted to be, you know, I was obsessive. And then I'm slowly realizing that all these people, they're curious. They want to know, you know, why does that work the way it does? So how do I deal with upset in the room? Well, I'm just a human being. And I just think, you know, we're not here. This isn't a shock podcast. I'm not trying to get, this isn't, you know, Piers Morgan's life stories. And by the way, I think he's a fantastic interviewer. As much as people might not like him, his style, but his ability to.
Long form
Piers Morgan is 10 times better than short form Piers Morgan. 100 times.
He actually lets people talk. That's my issue with him. But yeah, some of the long form stuff, he does actually allow them to respond to his questions before barking something else in their face.
Barking. I mean, that's true. It's fair. So, you know, this isn't about getting tears. This is about getting to the heart of who somebody is. And sometimes that means going through a difficult part of their lives.
Do you find, when you do get to those sensitive topics, do you find your follow-up questions have to be a little bit softer to bring them back from that emotional state. Do you find conversation just naturally flows out?
It's just, I go in with a lot of research. I don't go in very often with preset questions. So I try to let them sit in that moment a little bit. I'm not afraid. Look, this isn't radio. I don't care about dead air.
Yeah.
If there's 20 seconds where that person's collecting themselves, I'm going to allow them to do that. And you might get something more out of them that allows us to see who they are and why they are who they are. And again, it's not about these gotcha moments or this, you know, I think this is going to do brilliantly on social media. This is raw. I'm having a human to human conversation. I don't think we speak to each other enough. I think conversation is the only way that minds get changed. You know, you could say conflict, but does conflict really change minds, or does it force you to ascribe to a certain way of thinking?
Deep heals in deeper, I think.
Of course you do. So I think conversation is just this beautiful way, and podcasting is the perfect medium to understand who somebody is.
So follow-up question from me, just based on our conversation. So you've got a great mix of guests, haven't you, where some will be very used to doing sound bites and we've told their story 100 times. There's others who may not have had an interview, like a proper interview before.
Yeah, certainly not one like this.
So do you find, have you noticed that there's a difference in how they react to that emotion, or afterwards, whether there's like a cathartic effect for the ones who haven't had to go through, haven't had to talk about it 100 times versus the more media trained?
So it's hilariously, you can tell when it's stock answers. And more often than not, I've already heard that answer two or three times because I listen to them on other things.
Got it.
So the second I hear that, I know that it's not going where I want it to go. Because I don't just, sometimes that stock answer is okay because it might be that they've condensed this aspect of their life into a 20-second story or into a 2-minute story or whatever it is. If I hear, and you hear it straight away, you hear these keywords, you hear them lean into it. There's a way of breathing, even some of the guests have before they launch into a story that they've definitely told on other podcasts or to the media or, you know, on TV interviews or whatever it is. You can hear it, you know it. However, it's then about trying to take the conversation a slight different way and surprising them with a question. I love, my favorite thing is somebody saying, nobody's asked me that before.
Yeah, you've had a couple of those.
Yeah, I've had a good few of those. And I love
that,
it.
That shows the research you've done though, right? Because I imagine a lot of the media junkets, it is going to be same questions. They don't really care about the person. They just need to get the key points out.
Yeah.
You've clearly done your research and you want to come in. I know who you are as a person. You want to come in and make an impact and go, I know you've been asked this 100 times. So actually I'm going to come at you from a different angle.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can see how they respond to it, which is great.
Yeah. I think it comes from a genuine want to understand who that person is. I want to know you, you know, like, I'm endlessly fascinated, as I say, and it's not just with people, it's with things. I don't know. And you're the same. You know, it's like, okay, well, I don't know why that thing works like it does. I need to understand it. I'm not your prodigy pulling things apart, pulling technology apart to understand it. I'm not mechanically minded like that. But if there's, you know, something in the world that I don't understand, I am so prepared to be the stupidest person. I'm so prepared to be the idiot and say, I know nothing. And I think I think that trait is something that I'm seeing again in everybody I'm speaking to.
I think in my experience with the conversations I have, I often find asking the stupid question, being the stupidest person in the room, allows everyone else to relax.
Of course it does.
You often find, I often, when I'm in my meetings, I go, I'm going to ask a stupid question, but just bear with me. And 9 times out of 10, no one knows the answer to that stupid question that I just asked.
And they just never wanted to look stupid and
exactly,
ask it.
Exactly, whereas I've put myself forward and been the stupid one, and then allows everyone to go, oh yeah, we should probably find that out, shouldn't we? Yeah. And I think coming at it from that angle, it disarms people, doesn't it?
I think so. And I think also coming from PR marketing, and business in general, stacked full of acronyms and you know, terminology that's almost designed in my mind to act as a veil, to act as a way to ensure to gatekeep knowledge.
There's a fantastic article knocking around on the internet, and it compares CEO speech from the 1920s to the 2000s. Right, and in the 1920s, CEOs of companies just talk like an average Joe. There was no acronyms, no special language. And over the years, it's got more and more complex. So, you know, everyone talks about stakeholders and managing expectations, which are all just corporate buzzwords that don't really mean anything and could be said in a much more basic way.
Yeah.
And they've noticed the trend over time because...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You want to gatekeep those positions, and almost it's a bit like the if you see someone walking in a white coat, oh, they must be superior. Is that CEOs and people high up have a different language and differentiates them from us poor people?
And, very interesting.
Just interesting how that goes across, you know, different industries.
I just want through conversations on this to simplify and to be the proxy for the audience who might not understand, let's say, I'm talking to Sean Conway and he talks about zone one training. It's for me to then contextualize and to be the stupidest person in the room and to say, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, a great example of that is I love it when the Rugby World Cup's on. So I've played rugby since I was 11. Yeah, I don't know any of the laws. I know just enough that I can get by, but I don't know them in detail. And when you watch rugby normally, the commentators just commentate. That's all they do because it's for the purists. In the Rugby World Cup, they know that a wider audience is watching. And then they break down. They go, the reason why that penalty is coming is because they did X, Y, and Z. And I go, brilliant. I didn't know that.
It's helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really
helpful to bring it to that new audience, as you say.
Yeah, but it also helps me, who's played for 15 years or whatever it is, to be able to understand it better. Okay, we will do another listener one. So we've got one from Mo, who DM'd. I'm not a social media person, but apparently DM'd on Instagram.
Yeah.
So you ask all of your guests what success looks like to them. What does success look like to you? Now, I think you may have partially answered that in question two, but I think it'd be good to get it again.
At first, it was breaking a cycle. It was changing my... sounds so corny, but it was changing my life. It was recognizing that people that grew up like I did and like people now still do very often are doomed to repeat that cycle of violence, abuse, drugs, prison, crime, all these things. And success to me looked like that not being the case, first of all. And then that quickly became financial security. Which wasn't really, you know, you don't just go put your finger in the, you know, oh, I want financial security, thanks. Can I have one financial security, please? You know, through hard work and determination and obsession and curiosity and all those things and resilience, and like I keep banging on about, I think you know, you can get to it, and risks as well. You know, take a risk or two. You know, I started radioactive PR when I was 27. You know, it's a risk. You know, you've got kids. I'm like, you know, what if this fucks up? It's like, well, I've realized, I was like, well, I'm pretty good at this. People think I'm pretty good at this, at least. So I'll just go get a job. It's hard. I can't give a soundbite to it. It is recognizing joy. It is not pursuit of happiness, because I don't think you can endlessly pursue happiness and hope to just eternally be happy. I don't think that exists. I don't think that's realistic. It's to love and be loved, which is why I get me started this saying, you know, that we, you know, I'm never going to be ashamed of, you know, affection for friends and family. I think if you can love and be loved well, then that is success. It's funny because of all the people that I've spoken to, financial success was a motivation until it then wasn't.
So that was, I was going to lead on from the question from Mo to say, does it evolve? Because a lot of people say, if I win the lottery, I'm happy for life.
Yeah.
And I don't, and although that's probably very true, is that doesn't mean then you just sit down and watch TV for the rest of your life. You still have to do something. So have you, so you're obviously, you said, and I think the financial security piece that you said is you've gone, right, I wanted to get away from all of this. Yeah. And then you went, right, that quarter that morphed into financial security because you realized that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Like they talk a lot about the reason why crime rates are high is because if you're poor, you're more likely to go down that road because there's no support for you. Mm-hmm. So if you've got money, you don't feel the need to then go and do those things. So, you know, it's almost a more mature view of how to get away from those things is to be comfortable and not be figuring out how can you keep the lights on.
Yeah.
So you achieve that. And then obviously you've now gone, right, I want to do, want to see.
That's a privileged position to be in. I appreciate that. Christ, as I say, you can't just order one. It's then staying that. But it does give you the opportunity to make further risks. Which is why then you look at people that have grown up. It's so funny that I used to look at what I deem to be more privileged people and think, you can't fail. You can't fail because there's always a safety net for you. And then you realize that's very true. You know, for my children will always be okay. I hope. Short of me doing something fucking very stupid. But, you know, I've been running the company for 9 years now. I will always make sure we're okay. But, you know, that's because there's a safety net there. It's a real privilege to have that.
I think the one thing that needs to be said is it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of commitment, and a lot of risks that I think a lot of people aren't willing to do. I mean, we'll eventually get onto it, but there's a fantastic quote in the Marnie Swindles episode that I think you say, which is about living in a way that no one wants to have a life that...
Okay, I love that quote, so let's get to it when we get to it.
And that's what you've done, you know, I was talking to you the other day and you were driving somewhere on holiday. You were going away for a weekend, but you were editing this podcast at the same time. Like, obviously you weren't driving, but you were in the passenger seat, but you were in the car. But rather than being in the moment of we're going on holidays, no, I need to get this done. And I don't think a lot of people are willing to put their life on hold to such a degree to succeed. Yeah. Now, and it, you know, it's a phase thing, right? You do all the hard work up front, then it's management, then maybe you eventually get to sit back until you find your next thing. But I don't think people realise how much effort you put in to all the different aspects of your life.
And there's sacrifices, right? I mean, that, you know, Christ, editing a podcast is not a hardship, you know? Being stuck security for 14 hours, that's a job I wouldn't want. Do you know what I mean? Doing the night shift in a care home, that's a thankless job. Like getting kicked and spat at, and, you know, and these are all, I think what people, especially in and around the profession that I have ended up being in, people, they lose sight of the privilege. I mean privilege in the sense of, like, you know, look at what you do and what you get paid to do. I'm endlessly grateful for, you know, the fact that I have been paid to, and, you know, and we can still can, you know, work as difficult as the last few years have been, in a position where I can get paid to the creativity, the silly things that my brain can conjure up and my collective teams, you know, abilities can make happen. So
we've got another one from LinkedIn. So from Paul, who's sent through something on LinkedIn. So it says, first up, congrats on a great series, Rich. Really enjoyed listening and love the contrasting guests. Boxer 1 week, celeb PR in the next. Love it. Question for you. The podcast was obviously born out of an interest in hearing how people started out and what drove them. But after speaking to your guests, have they made you look at your own journey any differently? Have they said something about what drove them that made you take a step back and think, hang on a second, that has happened to me and I never saw it as a driving force in my journey?
Cheers, Paul. One aspect sticks out, and that is, I mean, of course, everybody's got very, very different ambitions, drives. And it took me a long time to accept that anger was mine, because it seems counterintuitive. It feels like something you shouldn't say out loud for a start. A desire to prove people wrong, a desire to say, you know, no, I'm my own person, and, you know, I'm not the sum of what you believe of my family, and, you know, because that was an issue, you know, there's so much judgment, and sometimes rightly so, you know, if anybody in my family listens to this, they'll probably smile as that said. And it took me a long time to accept that anger was a big part of my drive. Marnie spoke to it. She said something And you know, something I've half thought was that she doesn't know that she's ever going to be truly happy. I've said that a million times. You know, like to...
That goes back to your point around the pursuit of happiness.
Isn't necessarily the goal,
right? It's a hard thing because also happiness shifts over time.
Yeah, it does. You're right. And it's finding joys. But it was... Like, I know that even in doing this, it's been arguably successful. Possibly even objectively successful. It doesn't fill me up, though. You know, it is okay to still be, you know, in the pursuit of success. You know, I'm, as I say, 36. I've got a load that I want to achieve. You know, my PR blog was the number one PR blog. Cool. So what? My book was a best-selling book. You know, and this all sounds like clangs. And you're nodding, but I say it and I can 100% look you in the eye and tell you that it didn't do anything. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are trying to pursue success and those things, objective successes, you know, selling the company. So I've spoken to people that have sold the companies for, you know, tons of money and are still incredibly unhappy. So I think what it's done is it's made me take a step back and think, okay, well, you know, we've made a ton of money through the agency. Wonderful, you know, and it's great because money gives you security and the ability, as I say, the freedom to try other things. It's great. It doesn't fill you up. So I think speaking to these people, what it's done is it's made me realize that I'm not, as I was once called, heartless. Why doesn't all this stuff bother you? You're just heartless. And I was like, no, I'm just like, if I allow myself to get upset by these things, then there can be no progress. You know, I can't move. So I just think I'm, you know, they say you're some of the people you surround yourself with, right? So it's like speaking to successful people is useful in the sense that it gets me to, okay, I'm not this really, you know, I'm not a freak for thinking, you know, in terms of, you know, right, drive always, keep moving always. And I think that's really helped me, if I'm honest.
Now, so I've got some peek behind the curtain questions now.
Okie dokie.
So we've just got two left. So first one, so obviously you've done the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back on the first season, is there anything, obviously, you know, this was all new to you and we can see your sort of progress as you've gone through the interviews, but looking back across the whole season, is there anything that you'd have done differently?
Yeah. I would have spent, maybe I'd have done video from the off.
Okay.
Because social media promotion wise, it's relentless. And I joke in some of the posts that it must get really tedious seeing me crop up. I don't know if that's an insecurity or not, but just seeing it pop up and being like, yeah, bloody Rich is talking about that podcast again. I mean, I've seen people say things like that. Friends of mine have said, you know, I saw it on LinkedIn. It was like, you know, I can't bloody move for Rich banging on about this podcast. It's like, but I, you know, I remember coming to the industry and thinking, nobody's going to cheerlead for me. Just like nobody has, you know, nobody's there if you're not there for yourself. So you got to back yourself. But equally then, I recognize that can get irritating. I'm so much more comfortable promoting other people than I am promoting myself in this. Again, I'm not without ego. You know, that this isn't a sorrowful look at, oh, I just wish that I could say something nice about myself. It's not that. It's social media is tough and promotion is tough. And, you know, podcasts, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions of podcasts. But we have gotten to the top 1%. It's not enough for me. You know, I want to be in the top. I want to be in the top charts. I want to be not leading news agendas. That sounds ridiculous. But I want to be drawing things out of inspirational, successful, fascinating, interesting people that do then resonate and, you know, reach a wider audience as a result. So
do you think it changes the dynamic video?
It does. It does.
Because I find, so I'm spend my life on Teams and I find I'm not really me in front of the camera, mainly because I can see myself. I'm like a cockatiel or something where I'm just staring at myself in the mirror. but yeah, do you think that makes people a little bit more cagey because they're now worried about how they're presenting?
It will change the dynamic, but the sad fact is, like, I hope that I can ease people into it. I mean, we see enough podcasts with video, right, where people clearly give enough of themselves that it works and can work. I just think from a social media content perspective, it gives you so much more. So I would change that if I had to pick one thing. But then other things, no, I've worked bloody hard on making this as good as it can be. And it's not where I want it, but I don't know if I've ever had anything where I wanted it.
Right, last question. So again, this is because I don't know anything about podcasting. What was the hardest part of setting up or like, you know, the technical side of
the podcast? The technical side actually is fairly easy. Again, I'm curious. I wanted to know what the best technical setup was. You know, the mixer I've got is a recommendation that the mics are. And it's actually lovely because I've had people contact me since asking about the technical setup, and I can help them and send them links and all those things. You know, so that's been lovely. The hardest thing has been the sheer number of messages, the volume of contact that you have to make each guest happen.
Right, okay.
So I'll go out. You know, I've got a nice network. You know, I appreciate that my phone book probably looks very different to most people's in terms of the people that I can just pick the phone up to and say, hey, I'm doing this thing. You know, do you want to come do it? That's 15 years of working in an industry where we work with, you know, successful people, entrepreneurs, athletes, entertainers, philanthropists, as I always say, the kinds of people that I speak to. But fuck me, it takes a lot of work to make these things happen. If I was to guess, I reckon 30, 40 messages per person, and that's phone calls, that's can we do that date? No, that changes. Can we do that date? No, that changes. You know, we've had a ton of things fall through. I was sat in a recording studio. We'll get onto this actually when we speak about one of the other guests. I sat in a recording studio that I was paying for, and the guests by an hour still hadn't arrived, and I was worried, and you know, they ended up not coming and still haven't come on. Only last week. So went to France for the World Cup final, as I said, with a few of our friends. And I got a call. So I'd contacted everybody that I wanted to speak to that was coming to speak at the Cheltenham Literature Festival. And I'd pulled together a list of all their agents and contacted everybody, a list of 40 people or so. So I got lots of rejection. Working in PR is wonderful. The first phone call I ever made to a journalist to tell them about a client, the journalist said, oh, do fuck off, and just hung up on me. I'm a master at rejection. I don't, you know, water off a duck's back in that sense. Getting told no, Christ, for some reason, and this is...
Well, we all tell the kids, right? The worst thing they can say is no.
Yeah, right, so what? And, you know, one of my dream guests is Darren Brown. You know that I've loved Darren Brown forever. I know his manager-ish, well enough to make an ask anyway. And it was incredibly humbling and right before the podcast had even started. And he went, Rich, you don't have a podcast. I was like, right, yeah, cool. And then in the back of my head somewhere, I'm going, he'll come on. He'll come on. He'll come on one day. So all the people that say no, I'm like, okay, that's a no for now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a no for now.
Well, no, I think as well, one of the challenges is it depends whether they're in the middle of their press tour.
Oh, it's like, because so many factors.
Celebrities don't necessarily always want to just talk to somebody. Mm. They're not desperate for attention all the time. You find a lot of them, if they've got a new project coming, they'll go around and you'll see them popping up on a number of podcasts and on a number of different TV shows because they've got that thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And so you just got to catch them at the right time, haven't you?
It's all timing. It's all about timing. And also, of course, having something that they feel is worth their while. I'd contacted the actor Brian Cox's agents. So Succession, he's Logan Roy on Succession. He's a marquee TV show, enormous. So I got an email the Thursday. I was going to France on the Friday with friends. So going Friday, Saturday, come back Sunday. And got an email. Hey, do you want to speak to Brian Cox tomorrow in Bath? He's performing a play about Bach. And you know, you get an hour with him in his dressing room. And of course, my mind starts worrying. I think, A-list actor, Brian Cox.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. It's super recognizable. Done everything right now. He's up there with Ian McKellen for me. You know, I know he's not a knight yet. I mean, in fact, in my research, he's been asked if he would want to be a knight. And he said, no, actually, I kind of even regret accepting my honours before. I did it for my sister, who has now passed away. But she was a royalist and really loved all of that sort of pageantry. So he accepted his CBE, I want to say, for her. So I don't think he's the sort of person that would be knighted were he to, you know, wish to accept it. I was like, shit, this is a big deal. There's always a way. You'll always find a way. So and again, the privilege of being secure is that I can then book another flight, not get my money back on the other one, book another flight for the next morning, pay for a hotel for that night, do all of those things, only to then on Friday morning get a call from his team saying, yes, sorry, didn't realize he's double booked. I must have stopped. I didn't talk for about 10 seconds as the lovely lady said that to me, because I've done a ton of research. I was up until about 3 in the morning that night, And I'd obviously changed things and told my friends that, you know, I was their lift to the airport. So I was still going to be doing that, then going from Bristol to Bath, interviewing, come back to Bristol, staying at the hotel, getting up early, going over. So I'd miss a night. Been looking forward to going to France for ages. And then, yeah, for it to get cancelled, I think what people might be surprised to know is that for every single one of the guests that's happened in Series 1, there are hours and hours and hours of going back and trying to make it happen. It isn't just the case. Even for people that I really know well, where I can pick up the phone and say, hey, can we do this tomorrow? And they say yes. Or can we do this next week? Or when works for you? Because things shift, things change, and they invariably are busy people. They're successful people, which generally brings with it a degree of inflexibility, and an understandable degree of inflexibility. You know, there have been so many that I've got excited about to then fall through, or contact to stop, and all of these things. So yeah, I think that's the behind the scenes, the hardest thing has been getting the guests to a position where we're sat like this recording. I ease the second that I sit down and I'm having a conversation, I'm looking them in the eye, I'm like, cool. And then of course I panic about technical things, which I know Eddie's got. I know we're okay. You know, where I'm thinking, what if it just doesn't fucking record? What if this just doesn't, you know, am I just gonna, like, we'll get back in this, a corrupted file or something
you hit,
like that.
You hit stories, don't you?
Oh, you do? Yeah, yeah.
On other podcasts, we'll go, oh, we had to go back and re-interview this person. And, like, and yeah, to your
break
point,
my heart.
It takes that long to get the first one.
Yeah.
Imagine having to ring up and go, sorry, didn't record.
I mean, another one, I was walking through the door of the place where I was going to be interviewing Tom Skinner. So the apprentices, Tom Skinner, Bosch guy, wonderful, lovely man. You know, go and follow him. He's hilarious. And then I got a call saying, really, really sorry. We know that you're supposed to be interviewing him in half an hour or whenever it was, but he's unable to make it. I traveled to Essex. He was the only one. Luckily for the one that I mentioned, I was in the recording studio. You know, there was somebody else that I was driving across London to meet after that. So, you know, there was, you know, it wasn't a wasted journey completely. I drove all the way to Essex, you know, taking a day away from work, all of those things to go and get this. And then it just didn't happen. And it's heartbreaking, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And, you know, you've obviously got this list of people that you know absolutely fit the bill for what you want.
Yeah, I've got an enormous list.
And you're ticking off the ones that obviously we've heard so far. And then, yeah, you don't, just because it's not worked out, then they're still on the list.
Of course they are.
And they'll be coming in a few seasons' time or however long it takes.
It's a no for now. That's how I look at it. I think you're going to want to be on at some stage. You know, I'll be useful to you in some way, shape or form. Or you'll think, hey, that's a good conversation to have. For some of those people, that won't be true. But, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting people in this world. And a lot of people to talk to. So, yeah, I'm not worried in that sense. It's just, it's a lot of work. And I don't know if I knew that it would be this much. You've got guest bookers and things like that, you know, I'm talking to, and ways that we can, you know, ease that process. But I love being the person to tell them what it is and why I'm doing this.
It makes you wonder, because Joe Rogan always says that he's responsible for all his bookings.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's really? The one who greenlights the bookings. Like, he doesn't take recommendations. He's like, I want this person because I find them interesting. And so
I'm sure he's not the person sending 30 or 40 emails.
Well, that then becomes my question. And I imagine he may have been at one point. And at which point did that switch away?
Yeah, maybe.
He probably doesn't get no's because he flies people out to Austin. So,
yeah,
I don't think, you know, a free holiday. Thanks very much.
I don't think me saying, hey, I'll pay for you to get to Gloucester has the same allure.
It's a historic
beautiful
city.
Place. I mean, obviously, I've really tried to ensure, and I will continue to ensure, that we have people from the city and the county represented on the podcast. I think it's important, you know, to me. I think we just need to be positive. On that note, are they all the questions? That's all the questions. Let's take a quick 5-minute break and then come back and talk about the guests we follow. Nothing to say other than thank you very much for your questions again. hello@startingninepod.com, Starting Line Show across most of the socials. Say hey, ask away. If you're quick enough, then we'll answer you in the recording tonight, which will come out next Monday. And then we'll be taking a Christmas break. Going to be back in the new year with video. Incredibly excited. And
if you could all stop mobbing Stokes, please, I'm sure he'd appreciate it. Thank you. Have a great one. Have a nice weekend. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.